Okay, let's unpack this. You know that moment staring at like a million paint chips?
Oh, yeah. Eggshell white versus whisper white.
Exactly. And it seems totally mysterious. Or, you know, you just feel certain color combinations, maybe in a logo or on a website, they just work. But you don't quite know why.
Right.
Well, today we're diving straight into that, the surprisingly fascinating world of color theory.
And it's really more than just, tools for artists. It's actually a science.
Yeah, with some really old roots and practical uses in pretty much everything we see.
That's right. And for you, listening in, someone who, values getting to the heart of things efficiently, you've probably bumped into color theory before.
Sure, in art,
Or
design.
even just like the psychology behind branding colors. It's fundamental, really.
Totally. And for this deep dive, we've pulled together some really interesting sources. We're going to look at how our understanding developed.
From some early kind of weird ideas about vision.
Right, to the big scientific breakthroughs. And then also how this knowledge is actually used, in design to grab attention, maybe even affect how we feel. So our mission today, basically, cut through the confusion, give you a clear, insightful handle on what color the theory is, where it came from, why it matters. Hopefully, spark some of those aha moments.
Sounds good. So maybe start with how we even understood vision itself,
Yeah.
because it wasn't always obvious.
Right. For a long time in Europe, the research shows the belief was, well, that we saw because rays came out of our eyes.
Like little searchlights, yeah, which seems bizarre now.
Doesn't it? But progress was happening elsewhere, much earlier. 10th century, the Arab scientist Alhazen, he really flipped that idea.
Ah, Alhazen. Yes, his key insight was that light travels in straight lines from sources like the sun
To objects.
to objects, and then those objects reflect the light into our eyes. It carries the image to us.
And he didn't just theorize, right? He experimented with
Oh,
rainbows.
exactly. Using water-filled glass spheres, actually.
Yeah.
He studied how light behaved passing through them.
And what did he find?
He saw that the different colors within the light bent or refracted at different angles.
Okay.
Red light bent the least, blue light bent the most. So he was essentially showing how white light could be split into its component colors.
Spectrum, like in a rainbow.
Precisely. A
Yeah.
huge step. Understanding that color wasn't in the object itself, but a property of the light interacting with it.
Wow. Okay, so fast forward a few centuries, Isaac Newton.
Right.
Yeah.
Next 1600s, the famous prism experiments.
Yeah, during the plague lockdown, wasn't it? He took that light dispersion idea further.
He did. He split sunlight into the spectrum: red, orange, yellow, green, cyan, blue, indigo, violet. But the really clever bit was what he did
Did he
next.
put them back together?
Well, parts of them. He used more prisms,
Yeah.
mirrors, and found that if he recombined just red, green, and blue light,
He got white light again.
exactly, which led him to identify red, green, and blue, or RGB, as the primary colors of light.
Okay, RGB primaries for light.
Yeah.
And combining two of those gave secondary colors.
Yeah, blue and green made cyan, green and red made yellow.
And red and blue.
Red and blue light made magenta, which was interesting because magenta isn't actually in the rainbow spectrum, it's an extraspectral color.
Weird. And he organized this into his color wheel, right?
Yes, showing those relationships, primaries opposite their complements, the secondaries. But yeah, magenta was always this kind of curious outlier.
So Newton figured out the light side. But how do we actually see these combinations? Our eyes, our brains, how does that work?
Good question. That brings us to Thomas Young, early 1800s. He had a really groundbreaking hypothesis.
What was that?
He suggested our eyes don't detect all the colors directly. He thought we only really perceive those three primary light colors, red, green, and blue.
Only three. So how do we see yellow or cyan or everything else?
Young proposed our brain does the mixing. It combines those three basic signals. So see red light and blue light, brain says. Magenta.
Okay, and red and green light.
Brain says yellow, blue and green light. Brain says.
Cyan. Seems almost too simple, right?
Yeah.
But then Hermann von Helmholtz built on that later.
He did. He postulated the actual mechanism. Three different types of cone cells in the retina, color receptors.
Ah, the cones.
Right. Each type is most sensitive to a broad region. One peaks in the red zone, one in green, one in blue.
So it's about how much each cone type gets stimulated.
Exactly, the relative stimulation levels. If all three are hit roughly equally, like by sunlight, we perceive white.
Okay. And if an object reflects, say, only red and green light.
Then the red and green cones get strongly stimulated, the blue ones don't, and the brain interprets that pattern as yellow.
Mind blown.
Okay.
So that's how light mixes additively in our eyes. But then there's paint, crayons. That feels different.
It is different. That's the crucial distinction between additive color, light, and subtractive color, pigments.
Subtractive. Because pigments take light away.
Precisely. J.C. LeBlanc, back in the early 18th century, was apparently the first to really document this difference clearly.
Okay, explain subtractive.
Think about a red paint chip. It looks red because the pigment absorbs most of the blue and green light wavelengths and reflects the red ones.
So it's subtracting the other colors.
Yes. When you mix pigments, you're adding more absorbing materials, so more light gets subtracted. Mix all the subtractive primaries perfectly, and theoretically you get black because most light is absorbed.
Ah, okay. Which brings us to that color wheel most of us learned in school.
Right. Red, yellow, and blue as the primaries.
For pigments, yeah.
Yeah.
Not RGB like light.
Correct. This is the subtractive model. Mixing these gives the secondary pigments. Blue and yellow make green. Blue and red make purple. Red and yellow make orange.
And sometimes mixing, say, red and blue crayons gives you a kind of muddy purple, not a vibrant one.
Exactly. That happens because real-world pigments aren't perfect filters. They absorb a range of wavelengths and reflect impurities, too. It's not as clean as mixing pure light. The grade school wheel is a useful model for paint, but it's based on how those pigments interact.
Got it. So we've got the science of light and perception, the difference between light and pigment. But color is also about feeling, right? Emotion.
Absolutely. And that's where people like Alberto Sartano come in, focusing on the practical design aspects.
What does he emphasize?
How color can instantly grab attention, how it evokes feelings, communicates without words. It's a powerful tool for influencing emotions, which is obviously huge for branding or design.
Yeah, he gives examples, right? Red for power, passion, action.
Orange for joy, enthusiasm. Yellow, cheerful, energetic. Green, growth, harmony.
Blue, calm, confidence. Purple, luxury, creativity.
Even black and white have strong vibes. Authority, mystery for black, safety, innocence for white.
And these aren't fixed, are they? You can tweak them.
Definitely. Sartano points out the key properties. Value how light or dark it is. Temperature, is it warm like reds and yellows or cool like blues and greens? And saturation, how intense or vivid is the color?
So changing the saturation of red could make it feel less aggressive, maybe.
Exactly. Or lightening the value of blue could make it feel airier, less imposing. Playing with these gives you a huge range.
Okay, so to manage all this, we come back to the color wheel again as a tool for harmony.
Yes, it's fundamental for understanding relationships and creating combinations that, well, look good together. You've got the traditional primaries, red, yellow, blue for pigment, secondaries, orange, green, purple, and tertiaries in between.
And from those relationships, we get color schemes.
Right.
Like monochromatic.
Right. Using different shades, tints, tones of just one single hue. Very unified, subtle.
Analogous.
That's using three colors sitting right next to each other on the wheel. Often found in nature, feels harmonious, comfortable.
Okay. Complementary. That's opposites on the wheel.
Directly opposite. Creates really high contrast. Think like red and green or blue and orange. Good for making something pop.
Like a call to action button.
Perfect example. But sometimes that contrast is too strong, so you might use a split complementary scheme.
How does that work?
You take your base color, find its direct opposite, but instead of using the opposite, you use the two colors right next door to the opposite.
So it softens the contrast a bit, but keeps the energy.
Exactly. Then you have triadic three colors equally spaced out, like red, yellow, blue, can be quite vibrant, needs balance.
And tetradic, that's four.
Four colors using two complementary pairs. Rich, complex palette. Needs careful handling so it doesn't look chaotic.
And square is similar. Just four colors evenly spaced.
Yep. Four colors equidistant on the wheel. Often works best if the colors are used somewhat equally.
It's amazing how structured it can be.
Yeah.
So we know how colors relate, but let's dig into that feeling aspect. More color psychology.
I've shared broadly. Warm colors, reds, oranges, yellows tend to feel energetic, exciting, action-oriented.
Well, cool colors, blues, greens, purples, feel more calm, serene, maybe passive?
Generally, yes. And neutrals, grays, browns, white, black often act as the backdrop, the foundation.
But this isn't universal, is it? Culture matters.
Hugely important point. The research stresses this. Red means good luck and fortune in China, but might symbolize mourning in parts of South Africa. White is for weddings here, but funerals in some Eastern cultures.
So you can't just assume blue always means trustworthy everywhere.
Absolutely not. You have to consider the cultural context. User testing becomes critical if you're designing for a global audience.
Which ties right into user experience or UX design. Color is obviously huge there.
Paramount. On screens, we're back to that additive RGB model we talked about, red, green, blue light combining.
And contrast is key for usability, right? Making text readable, buttons noticeable.
Essential. Good contrast helps users scan, find information quickly. Vibrancy can evoke the right emotion for the brand or product.
But you also have to think about accessibility.
Vitally important. Designing for people with color vision deficiencies, ensuring things work even if someone perceives color differently. And like we said, being aware of geographical expectations for color.
It all circles back, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
To Newton and his wheel in 1666.
His work really laid the foundation, understanding colors as our perception of light wavelengths.
But didn't stop there. The research mentions others, like Goethe.
Right. Goethe focused more on the subjective psychological experience of color. And Leblanc, distinguishing additive and subtractive, it kept evolving.
And it has real-world applications beyond design,
yeah.
Like testing for colorblindness.
Yeah, the Ishihara pleats those circles of dots with numbers hidden inside. That's applied color perception science.
And camouflage.
Also mention Abbott Thayer's ideas about disruptive patterning using color and shape to break up an animal's outline against its background. Very clever stuff.
So wrapping this up, let's maybe synthesize the key points from this deep dive.
Okay. Well, we tracked the journey, didn't we? From early ideas about vision to Al Hazen understanding light's path, Newton splitting and recombining light.
To understanding how our eyes, with those red, green, and blue cones, actually perceive color through additive mixing.
And crucially, distinguishing that from subtractive color, mixing the pigments, paints, the red, yellow, blue model.
Right. And then we looked at the practical side. Using the color wheel and those schemes, monochromatic, analogous, complementary, etc., to create harmony in design.
Yeah, understanding color not just as physics, but as a powerful communication tool.
So the big takeaway, color isn't just decoration. It's this blend of hard science, light physics, biology of the eye, and the softer science of psychology and communication.
It shapes our experience constantly.
Exactly. And for you, the listener, hopefully understanding these layers, the science, the art, the psychology equips you to be more, I guess, discerning.
More informed, yeah.
Yeah.
When you look at a website, an ad, a painting, you can start to see why the colors work or maybe why they don't.
You can move beyond just I like it or I don't like it.
To understanding the principles behind those reactions. Why does this feel calming? Why does that grab my attention?
Right. So maybe a final thought to leave you with. Now that you've got this glimpse into the science and the art of color, just consider how often your perception, your feeling about the world, is being shaped, subtly or not so subtly,
mm-hmm.
by this constant play of light hitting objects and your brain making sense of it all.
Mm-hmm. What might you notice differently now?
Yeah. What new colors, metaphorically speaking, might you start to see just by paying a bit more attention? Maybe even explore the cultural meanings or the feelings evoked by colors that catch your eye from now on.